I read a story a few weeks ago about a guy named Stephen. And Stephen worked for a relief organization. And he was telling a story about how he went to Syria to do some relief work there. And so he knew the routine and all of that stuff. And so he flew into Syria. And when he got there, he had an issue with his visa. And so he was not allowed to leave the U.S. Embassy, basically, there in Syria, and wasn't allowed to leave. And so he was stranded there, basically, until everything got worked out with his visa. And luckily, he knew some individuals that lived in Syria, and knew an individual that worked on the parliament, was part of the parliament there in Syria. And this individual had caught wind that Stephen was stranded in his town, in his country, in his city and stuff. And so he decided he'd go visit him. And so he went in, checked on Stephen, and realized that Stephen was incredibly bored. Because he couldn't do anything. He couldn't leave the hotel. He couldn't leave the embassy. Like, he couldn't do anything. So he was pretty much stranded there. And through conversation, came to find out that Stephen was not only bored, but he was lonely and just ready to be home. He was over being there. But he couldn't go anywhere because nothing had been figured out for his visa. And so he decided that what he would do is he would throw a party for Stephen. And so he would invite a bunch of the locals over to the hotel, and they ended up having this party on the roof of the hotel. And so Stephen and his friends show up, and I think he mentions in the story that his friend really just wanted to celebrate and show off his American friend to all of his Syrian friends. And so they get up there, and there are some pretty high-ranking government officials within the Syrian government that are invited to this party, and their gun-carrying bodyguards are up there with them. And then there were several different prominent businessmen in the country that were there, part of the government or part of the party as well. And then he makes note in the story that there was an individual that showed up that looked like he had been on a several month journey out in the desert. He had the full outfit on and had his camel out outside the hotel and all of that stuff, had the full garb, looked and smelled like he had just come from a very long journey with no shower or anything. And so that he goes on and talks about the conversation that was happening in the party, and of course there's the little bit of a language barrier, so they're trying to have as much conversation as possible. It can only go so far, and then this individual that looks like he's been on this long journey in the desert comes over and starts having a conversation with Stephen, and so he starts talking to him a little bit. And then he asks Stephen a question. And in the story, Stephen says it was a question that changed everything for him. And he asked him, he said, "A son, do you have? Do you have a son?" And Stephen said, "Oh, yeah, I do." And then this gentleman said, "What's his name?" And he said, "Jonathan." And as soon as he said Jonathan, this individual's like, "Ah!" And he started clapping and started celebrating everything. And he says, "You have a new name." And Stephen's like, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Your new name is Abu John." And Stephen's still just thinking, "What are you talking about?" And so as soon as he shouted Abu John, everyone on the rooftop like erupted, like this noise erupted, and people started celebrating. There's lots of like patting on the back, like shaking hands, celebrating, and just all kinds of stuff. And Stephen is just kind of like, "What is going on here?" And through further conversation with this gentleman, it comes to find out that Abu is the Syrian word for father, and then John, obviously shortened for Jonathan, his son. And come to find out, when you become a father in that culture, when you become a father to a son, you as a father have a new name because that's a great responsibility. It's a great gift that you've been given to be a father. And so the tradition is that you get this new name, that Stephen is no longer known as Stephen. He's known as Abu John. And so he goes on to talk a little bit more about some of the conversations that he had. And he talks about how his friends in Syria live differently. I mean, obviously, culturally, they live differently. But there's something bigger than that, that they just live different. And talks a little bit about some of those things. And he talks about how they gave him this new name. They didn't ask if they could give him a new name. They just gave him this name, they declared it, and then they celebrated it. And that was it. They didn't really have much conversation after that. That was about it. That this was your new name now. They declared it, and then they celebrated it. We've been going through the book of Colossians. So if you would, go ahead and turn to the book of Colossians. And we're still in Colossians 1. This is moving at the pace that I really like, nice and slow. Colossians 1 still. And Bob's been going through a lot of things there in Colossians 1. And again, we'll probably be in Colossians for the next several months. So Colossians 1, and I'm going to be in 12 through 14. In particular there. And let me read that. In giving joyful thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of his people and the kingdom of light, for he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. Now there are a few things that I want to just kind of talk about in those two verses that have been changing my life over the last 3 to 6 months. And it's kind of this reoccurring theme, and apparently I'm not catching on because it just keeps coming up over and over and over again. And it's like God's finally shining this light in my face saying, hey, pay attention to this. This is important. And so here, Paul is saying that God has now qualified you to share in the inheritance of his people. Right? He says that you have been qualified, and you can make that to being you as in, like, specifically to the Colossians or to you sitting here. I think it applies both. He says that you have now been qualified to share in the inheritance of his people. And the inheritance of his people, God's chosen people all throughout the Old Testament was... What? I heard it whispered. Yes, the Jews. That was God's chosen people, were the Jews. And so they were to be in this covenant relationship with God, to put on display how it was to be lived out, to be in this relationship with the Father and all of that. And so they were God's chosen people. And now God is saying that he has qualified you, he being Jesus, that through the person of Jesus has now qualified you, someone that is not a Jew, to now partake in this inheritance, to be able to receive this inheritance. The door has now been opened to all people from everywhere. It's open to anyone now, if you choose to accept that and choose to live in this new kingdom. Later on in Colossians 3, verse 12, Paul says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. Similar tone to Colossians 1. Paul here is giving us a new name. Paul is giving us a new name. We in this moment are given a new name. We are being told who we are now. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. that if we choose to accept this, and it's our choice to live in this kingdom, to live this certain way, to live under the lordship of Jesus, if we choose to do that, we are being moved into a different place. A place of being holy, a place and holy being pure and unblemished, that whole idea. He says that you are, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved. Not, therefore, as God's chosen people, hopefully you will be holy one day. Or, I wish you would just get this, and I wish you would be holy. I wish you were more holy than you are now. No, he says that we are these types of people now. That we are chosen, holy, and dearly loved. That this is who we are. We are being given a new name in this moment. The Father has qualified you into the inheritance in the kingdom of light. Now, I don't know if you're like me. When I hear this type of stuff, oh yeah, I know. I hear you. I know what you're saying. I'm tracking with you. What's next? Let's move on to the next thing. This is shaping everything for me right now. Learning to trust what God says about me. It seems like the issue then is not so much of me beating myself up over all the things I'm not doing, or all the things that I am doing poorly, but rather believing and trusting that God keeps insisting that we are this other type of person, that we are this holy and dearly loved, that we are chosen, that he's moved us now into this place of inheritance. It's learning to let what God says about you shape what you believe about yourself. Think about that for a minute. It's learning to let what God says about you, what God says about us, shape what I believe about myself and shape what I believe about you. Man, if I just wrap my mind around that just a little bit. I heard someone say once that if people were taught more about who they are, they wouldn't have to be told what to do. If people were taught who they really are, they wouldn't have to be told what to do. If I really believed and trusted that I am this type of person that God says I am, then I wouldn't have to just, well, God, what do I do? What do I do in this moment? I don't know what to do. I wouldn't have to do that as much because, man, I am this type of person. This is who I am. And I can glorify God through doing this type of action because it comes more natural instead of, well, I hope I don't make a mistake here. I hope I don't mess up. And then there's this sense of fear of failure coming into my life. But God believes in me. God believes in you. You are this type of person. God has given you this new name. He's moved us into this place of inheritance now. I believe that if you and I can just wrap our mind around this concept just a little bit, this understanding that God is giving us and God has given us a new name and a new identity, it has huge implications for how I go about living this afternoon and how I go about living tomorrow and how I go about the next two verses. Paul has just talked about, okay, Colossians 1, just talked about this inheritance, receiving this inheritance. We've been moved into this place of inheritance, right? Just talked about that, that God has moved us into that and that God is rescuing us from the dominion of darkness. Verse 13, for he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness, right? Oh, I'm with you, Tim. I'm tracking. I get you. This is where everything changes for me. Because it says he doesn't just rescue us from the dominion of darkness. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness, yes, and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves. So, he has not just rescued us from something, but he's rescued us into something and for something. It's not just rescuing us from a bad situation, but it's rescuing us from that and placing us into something better, into something bigger than ourselves. He saves us from something, into something, and for something. That being, he has rescued us and saved us into Jesus for his kingdom, to be about his kingdom. The kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. And now these two words are interesting words, these words of redemption and forgiveness of sins. The word redemption carries this weight to it that it's not just the removal of something or someone from a situation that's not healthy or that's not good. While that's part of it, that's only part of it. That's not all of it. Redemption has this weight to it that it carries us into something better. It moves us into something better. That is not just the removal of someone or something in a rough situation, but it moves us into a situation that is good, that is healthy, that is whole, that it's moving us. It's not just moving us out, but it's moving us towards something and for something. And redemption is this idea of releasing and rescuing of captives, which came through the payment of Jesus on the cross. And then the word forgiveness, and I know some of these things are kind of... And here's the thing, okay? Let me be honest. When I was reading through some of this stuff, this was like Christianity 101 to some degree. Like, we know this idea of redemption to some degree. We know that God has moved us into this, that we are God's children, that we are this way. And talking about forgiveness, this word forgiveness... We know we have the idea of what forgiveness is, and we understand what forgiveness is, but we often move by it so quickly that I don't know that I allow it to work in my life to the depth and the degree that it should. Forgiveness, and in particular in this passage in Colossians 1, it which is generally most cases when we talk about forgiveness, it carries this weight to it. That it's the release from bondage or from imprisonment. It's the pardoning of sins as if they had never been committed. Boy, I don't live like that. I don't know if you all can see this bag that I have behind me. This giant bag of baggage that I bring with me everywhere I go, of the mistakes that I've made, of the decisions I've made that have not been healthy for me or for others. I often don't live like I'm a forgiven man. And this idea of forgiveness and redemption and all of this is the picture of the kingdom of the Son he loves. This is a picture of that. This is a picture of the kingdom that Jesus talked a lot about. Read through the Gospels. Jesus talks an awful lot about the kingdom. This idea and picture of heaven and hell for Jesus was very real and was this concept and this reality that was present. That it wasn't just something that was down the road. That one day, heaven or hell will come. But it was a very present reality that can be experienced today. That there are ways to live and enter into heaven and into hell today. And there are ways that we can offer glimpses of heaven or hell today. Jesus talked about this new kind of life, this idea of being moved into redemption, into forgiveness, not as one that's to come, but as one to be experienced now, to be experienced today. That it wasn't just about a future place, but it can be experienced and lived out and fleshed out today. Not for a future day, but for today. And not just for you and I, but for everyone. For everyone. This idea and this kind of life that Paul is talking about here in Colossians, and this idea that and this kind of life that Jesus talked a lot about, is not one of just escaping the world, but of making the world a better place today. And I think these are concepts that we all kind of know, that, oh yeah, I'm with you. But I lose track of that so quickly. I lose focus on that so fast. I think this is why this idea and this life that Jesus talked about is experienced here today. Jesus prays that in Matthew 5. He talks about your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. For it to come here. It's not just to be experienced one day, but it's to be experienced today, right now. We can experience redemption and forgiveness now, so that the kingdom of the Son he loves can come as it is in heaven. This can be experienced in our lives today. And Scripture talks about how it's freely given. Paul talks about how we have been moved into this inheritance. We've been given this new name. And we didn't ask for it. He places this on us and says, you now are these types of people. It was freely given to us. Therefore, it's to be freely given. And here's where I struggle. And here's what I've noticed about me. I'm cool with accepting it freely. I'm not always the best at giving it freely. You have to earn it. You have to do something. You have to prove to me that you are worthy of this. And I'm super thankful that God doesn't look at me like that. Because it's been freely given, and it's our choice to choose to live in that kingdom, to live in that reality or not. To live under the lordship of Jesus or not. This redemption and this idea of forgiveness is not just for us, but it's for everyone. If the gospel isn't good news for everyone, then it's not good news for us. The gospel is good news for everyone, anywhere, wherever they are in this spot of life. Whatever decisions they're making, good or bad, the gospel is still good news. If you choose, it's your choice to choose to live in that kingdom or not. Now, I don't know if you're like me as well, that when I'm able to pull back and look at all of this and look at this idea, if I really am in my strongest moments, I look at this. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. It's I don't understand it. That someone would give me this, and then I take this and I twist it and turn it into all kinds of things that are unhealthy, that just aren't whole. And he still offers me this. It doesn't make sense. I've read this story before, I believe. It was one of those snowfalls that you never forget. Millions of white flakes filled the air, quieting the earth and swallowing the sounds. The resulting silence was thick with a texture you could feel. My nephew stood in the living room at the opening to our deck, a stranger to snow. His 2 years of life about to be altered forever. His eyes were blank, unaware. His body was clueless. His mind about to be overloaded with the electricity of discovery. And in the dark, Mother had maneuvered herself onto the deck's 2 feet of snow to capture the event on video. And Dad manned the sliding door, which had been unlatched for quick opening into the darkness. Uncle's hands were poised on the switch to light the deck. And Aunt was ready to lift her nephew into the mysterious new world of twinkling ice and a frozen softness. And the moment had finally arrived. In a perfectly timed instant, the deck lights went on, the camera started recording, the sliding door swept open, and a 2-year-old was transported from a world he knew to a world he had never seen. Wonder filled the air. His eyes stretched wide with astonishment, as though the only way to apprehend what he was seeing was for his eyes to become big enough to contain it all. He stood motionless, paralyzed. It was too much for a 2-year-old. Too much, really, for an any-year-old. Too often, when a person gets older, the person's too-much detector malfunctions, crowded by busyness and technology. He twitched and jerked each time a snowflake landed on his face, feeling it tingle as it was transformed from hostile cold to friendly warmth, caressing his face with tiny droplets of water. And just behind his large eyes, you could see sparks flying from the cross currents of millions of electric stimuli overwhelming the circuit breakers of his previously small world. His mind was a confusion of strange, conflicting realities. White and cold and floating and flying and tingling and electric, landing, touching, sparkling, melting, causing an overload so great, so overwhelming, he fell backwards into the snow. A slow motion landing in the billowy whiteness, and the snow tenderly embracing him. He had given up trying to understand snow and had given into experiencing snow. It was a moment of wonder. It doesn't make sense to me, this kingdom that Jesus talks about. It doesn't make sense to me that I've been given this new name, that God keeps insisting that I'm not this person that I once was. And I keep trying to figure it out. And while that's not bad, it just gets in the way sometimes of living this kingdom lifestyle that I know that I've been called to live, that we've been called to live. And sometimes I just need to stop trying to understand snow and just experience it. And sometimes I think I need to try to stop trying to figure God out and just experience God and the blessings of today. And then realize that that has been freely given to me, and then my job is to freely offer that to others. But it's my choice which kingdom I choose to live in. And it's your choice which kingdom you choose to live in. So may we today choose to live in the kingdom of the Son he loves. Let's pray. God, thank you for loving us the way that you do. It doesn't make sense. And I'm thankful that it doesn't make sense sometimes. Sometimes I'm frustrated by that. But God, help us to understand that you keep insisting that we are this type of person. And the world and my own selfish sinful desires keeps insisting that I'm this type of person, that I'm not good enough, that I don't do enough things. And sometimes there's truth to that. But God, it seems as if what you keep telling me is to just keep pushing into you, to keep trusting you, to keep leaning into you, and to experience this forgiveness that takes this burden off of me that I may not have known that was even there. To experience this grace that is incredibly scandalous and should change everything. And to experience this love and acceptance. And God, may I not be so selfish to just keep those to myself, but may I freely give those out. May we freely give those out to our community, to the students. May they freely offer this to their friends at school. May we offer these to our coworkers, to our neighbors, to our community, to the individuals that work at the restaurant that we go to today. May they realize that when we show up, something different is happening here because we've been moved from this place to be about this kingdom. So God, help us to understand that we are loved and that we too can love. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Bethany Christian Church podcast. We hope you've been encouraged in your walk with Christ. If you would like to talk to someone about what you have heard today, please contact the Bethany Christian Church office by calling 765-643-5713 or find us online at bethanyweb.net.